This is the Franklin River in Tasmania, Australia, by raft in 1970-71, written by Fred Kuloff, member of the party, and it's recited by Sugra Morley, who in the text is John. So in New Zealand, I'm Sugra. John doesn't exist in New Zealand. I've been here over 50 years. So Franklin by raft. In the beginning, the middle of the year 1970, an idea. David Hanson, Doc, Phil Reese, Phil, and Tim Downey, Hound, decided to raft down the Huon River on tractor tubes. Very little excitement was experienced, and so the idea was tossed around for some other faster flowing water, namely the Franklin River on the west coast. In October, Fred Kuloff acquainted with the idea and met up with Chris Lewis and John Morley, Sugra. Andrew Lawrence decided to join us only 3 days prior to leaving. Chris had not even met Andy until the night of the departure, on the evening of Thursday, the 24th of December, 1970. The rafts were built at Doc and Chris's flat in Mona Street, Battery Point. There were three rafts, each of 18 feet long and approximately 4 feet wide, made up of 3x1s bolted together. Four tractor tubes were fastened with rope for buoyancy. The tubes were all supplied by the Borough Pier Tyre Company, 25 tubes in all. The weekend prior to Thursday the 24th, Tim, Fred, John, Dow Patterson and Donna Burrell transported the rafts to the Franklin River. Water level was far too low, so it was decided to head for the Collingwood River, which flows into the Franklin River further south of the Collingwood River Bridge. Here all the rafts, tubes and some equipment were hidden from view. Without success, we walked and scrub-bashed for hours trying to find the meeting of the Franklin with the Collingwood River, so we ended up spending that night in Queenstown pubs and much later sleeping it off at the King River Reserve. Saturday was spent looking at the Franklin River viewed from Mount McCall, where the Hydroelectric Commission, HEC, has a road and quite a few buildings for some future dam. At Derwent Bridge, Jack Baldock was roused of his warm bed, and after some time a temporary repair job was done. The wagon was refueled and away to catch up to the others. Soon they met up with Tim, Fred, Andrew, who had turned after dropping off all the equipment at the Collingwood River Bridge. It was arranged to meet at the Franklin River before going on down to the Collingwood. Sugra led the way down Mount Arrowsmith, Fred trying to catch up with Sugra. Took a left-hand bend too fast and ended up hard against the bank on the right side of the road. The headlight and guard were bashed in, forcing it to rub hard against the wheel. Tim cut a pole and spent the next hour forcing the bodywork off the wheel. Frustrated, Fred tried hooking up the tow ropes onto a telegraph pole and reversed to pull out the mud guard, and in so doing bent the rail track telegraph pole. Steering was limited, so we headed very slowly down to the Collingwood River, arriving there at about 5 a.m. Christmas Day. There was no use in trying to get to Ocean Beach to meet Sugra, Doc and Ali. No sooner had we bedded down for some sleep, they arrived. John was underway to get Fred's car drivable. The tubes were pumped up with John Adams' portable pump. Stores were packed in large plastic bags. The morning was spent organising equipment and fitting the tubes to the rafts. Meanwhile, Fred drove his car to Strawn and John his car to Derwent Bridge. Took Fred 5 hours to hitch back to Collingwood River, having walked at least 10 of the 50 miles. Came back very red-faced from sunburn. John was back in 1.5 hours from Derwent Bridge. That's me, Sugra. Rafts were ready. Christmas lunch consisted of Chris's cold pies. Everyone shook hands, and John Adams and Ali gave us a farewell about 3:30 p.m. Slowly we left the Collingwood Bridge far behind, a great feeling of freedom. Tiredness was forgotten except for Fred, who was sleeping on his feet. Chris losing his crash helmet while having a drink from the river. Fred tried to salvage it and was left hanging from a branch which he had grabbed as the raft shot from under him. consequently experiencing his first unexpected swim and lost Chris's helmet in the process. Made camp by sundown, everyone was exhausted. Andy's leg was swollen from the bash he'd had against the dashboard in Fred's car. A few months before, he'd broken his leg while skiing. He was in considerable pain. Tim had his elbow bandaged as well, another result of Fred's accident. The big tube was released to make its own way because it became a nuisance after towing for all of some afternoon. So much for our reconnaissance craft. It was 7 feet in diameter and 3 feet high. Before going to sleep, we drank to our health with a drop of Doc's toddy. One cup of port, one cup of Bacardi, a cup of buttongrass water and lime fruit saline, all boiled up, and it was quite a brew. We slept like babies. Woke every 2 hours and cried? No, that was a sidetrack. Saturday, 26th of December. Slept in till 10 a.m. Worked for hours, strengthening the rafts with spars 5 inches in diameter for the full length of the rafts. Beautiful scenery is found along the Collingwood, and even platypus were seen in the calm, flowing water. All seemed well until Chris and John fouled up. Chris was left stranded on a rock, but finally was able to board Fred and Andy's raft and continued on that way until some bad rapids. Here, Chris lost his balance and the already overweight raft overturned. This wrecked Fred's $500 camera equipment and soaked much of the food and clothes. All effort was given to right the raft. Monday the 28th of December. Slept in as usual, still drizzling rain, getting used to being wet. 100 yards away, big rapids. Heard them rushing all night, not realising how big they were. Great fun was had coasting through dozens of fast but not dangerous rapids. But at about noon, we hit upon some very violent ones at one end of a deep gorge. Water boiled right across, out of sight around the bend. We watched and waited and fought while jagged rock outcrop stared up at us. We tied up securely to one outcrop at the foot of a 1,000-foot, almost sheer cliff. We left the rafts and headed cautiously along the cliff to a spot where we could see around the bend. What we saw was more rapids and then a beautiful, clear, calm backwash. Along the riverbanks were pines and thick undergrowth, which looked almost impenetrable. But the gorges, rocks, cliffs disappeared, so we all dashed back to the rafts, eager to get on. Tim and Doc aboard the raft, and as Fred unhitched it, the current swept all but Fred away. Sugra headed backwards out of control and was hurled through angry boiling waters and in a half-lying, half-sitting position, worked the paddle for all it was worth, and amazingly avoided rocks which surely would have meant a messy end had he hit one of them. Fred, however, was still half a mile back, out of sight, but he had found that there was only one way to the backwash over the cliff, so he started to climb 1,000 foot in well-worn soggy sand shoes. Tim and Doc set out looking for him from the other end and got their first glimpse of him as he came over the ridge. Thick horizontal scrub cut down visibility to nil. Continuous shouting, amazingly reunited but exhausted. Fred was glad to see Doc and Tim and decided to explore Upper Creek for gemstones, then paddled around in some calm water for a while, preparing ourselves for what lay ahead. Leaving Cooloff's Crag, the rafts were carried along quite fast by the current, past the beautiful greenery and smell of the thick forest, and into another deep gorge. Tim and Doc were well ahead, just out of sight, in fact. When Fred and John Sugra hit a bloody great rock in midstream, the raft overturned and stuck fast, held to the rock by a rope which had come untied. Sugra and Fred were unsuccessful in freeing the raft as water was building up behind it. Both, struggling to untangle themselves, finally were swept away by the current, but the raft settled itself more, jammed fast between the rock and a log. Fred and Sugra cleared the rough rapids and floated exhausted down to where Tim and Doc were waiting. Tim and Doc couldn't believe what they saw coming towards them without a raft, but they pulled both out of the water and decided it was time to set up camp. Before dusk, we made our way back upstream where we saw from a ledge that the raft was stuck fast and there was no way of salvaging it. We couldn't swim upstream and didn't have enough rope even to try descending the 80-foot drop to the riverbank. Fred and Sugra had only the clothes they stood in and one paddle Sugra saved. So we built a big log fire. Fred and Sugra slept in chaff bags that had been used for carrying the ropes. Bloody cold night had by all except Doc, whose snoring didn't help anyone. Tuesday, 29th of December. Still raining and did so all day, getting progressively harder and therefore much wetter. Chef Doc's breakfast consisted of a hot brew of gooey porridge and dried fruit. Great stuff. Tim and Doc climbed back to see if the raft was still stuck fast, but came tearing back down with the news that it had disappeared, apparently washed away by the rising river overnight. Built a bigger fire, cleaned up some gear, each thinking in silence of what to do. Great idea struck. Dig out a stage and use Doc's tent as a backdrop. The afternoon was spent reciting Henry Lawson's and Banjo Patterson from Doc's battered book of ballads. We joked, swore and sang, and our spirits were high. Built the fire even bigger for the coming night. Late afternoon was spent cutting spars for the standby raft, rigged from two spare tubes, which, by the way, were blown up by human lungs as the pump was useless. It was called the Chariot. Freezing cold night, so Tim slept on the stage under plastic sheets. John and Tugger and Fred back into chaff bags. No one slept well except for Doc, who snored even more heavily than the night before. Tim found he was drenched from condensation the next morning, caused by a sleeping bag under the plastic. Wednesday, the 30th of January, 30th of December. Rain had eased slightly overnight. Got an early start after packing away the gear. Water was fast, enabling easy going, as it had risen 3 feet. Happy with the progress of Chariot. Funny with Fred and Sugra perched on top, bobbing up and down, completely out of control, as there was no flooring to sit on. About 6 miles later, just before midday, we found to our amazement the lost raft. Overturned on the bank with one flat tube. Everybody was really excited. Losses were not serious. Fred had lost a sea bag full of food and camping gear and also lost valuable ropes. Obviously, the reason for losing this raft was a rope hanging overboard which snagged and held fast, a very costly mistake. We pushed the raft back into shape, replaced the flat tube with one from the Chariot and set off again. Just before we did so, a wallaby was spotted and Tim went right up to pat it. Very tame. It was probably never seen humans before. Fear got the better of it, however, and it finally took off. We soon came to a flying fox across the river and knew we'd come to the hydro hut at Mount Fincham. We carried everything up the 2 mile track to the hut. Once inside, it was a great relief, as all was dry and snuggly. The view was superb, the Frenchman's cap and the surrounding country. We had delicious hot meal, read dirty books, played cards, ate chocolate and hit the sack. Spring mattresses even, and on beds even. Thursday, 21st of December. Unsettled weather all day with the river steadily rising. Actually, the river fluctuates quite a lot, even this far upstream. The hydro had river level markers at this point. The day was spent repairing the rafts and drying out generally. Thanks to the hydro for some sugar to replace our soggy lot. The New Year Eve was celebrated by having nosh up of rice curry, pickled cucumbers, tomatoes and Doc's rich chocolate custard pudding special. Much too filling for our weekly fed stomachs. There was no booze or cigars to celebrate with, but the thoroughly enjoyable meal was made for it. The evening ended with having farting contests due to the rich food and talk of walking out by Sugra. Crotty was only a 20-mile hike out from Mount Fincham Hut. Anyway, the morale was high, especially after a hearty meal, rest and a good fart. Friday, the 1st of January, 1971. A letter was left at the hydro hut for the hydrology observer, so if we did perish, searchers would be able to piece together our trip. The day started off very badly, especially being the first day of the new year. The river was very fast with logs and branches, just barely showing above the water lines, making the river very dangerous to our only surviving tubes. Tim and Doc hit the first snag and ripped one tube so badly it was beyond repair, so it was replaced. This happened again a third, fourth and fifth time until there were no spare tubes left. Even after patching them with elastoplast or electric insulating tape, it wasn't very successful. Eventually the rafts had to be axed down to three tubes per raft. The rafts were nowhere near as stable, but were lashed side by side for stability through the worst of the rapids. The river widened and was going great. At least the snags were behind us. We came across the paddle which Fred lost 4 days ago near Mount Fincham. It was becoming late and not a campsite could be found. Finally, we decided to stop and hack our way through some thick undergrowth, crawling with leeches. It had been drizzly sort of weather all afternoon, and so everything was wet and cold, ideal leech weather. Two campsites were hacked out and tents were erected among the dense hewn pine forest. No enthusiasm to cooking a decent meal, so we proceeded to bake salami. Sugra, desperately avoiding the leeches while cutting salami, almost severed a finger. The blood attracted the leeches from all directions. Sugra, being clumsy with the use of his cut finger, knocked over a petrol stove and nearly set the tent on fire. We made the most of the uncomfortable situation and crawled into our sleeping bags exhausted. Saturday the 2nd of January. Still raining, miserable weather. Tim awoke, finding himself wet through. A small creek had sprung up overnight and ran down into his tent. Some time was spent strengthening the raft for safety with extra spars lashed to their battered frameworks. The river was now flowing fast, which meant excellent progress. An estimated 13 miles was covered that day, the best distance covered yet since starting out. The day ended with us entering the deepest gorge yet encountered, with a waterfall barring our way. Tired and hungry, camp was made up above the waterfall. A hearty meal was had and finished off with the most vile off can of beer that Tim secretly kept. Sunday the 3rd of January. The day confronted us with having to rope the raft through these amazing, dangerous waterfalls. A drop of about 20 feet overall, with jagged rocks protruding out into an S-shaped channel and down into calm waters below, with another smaller chute occurring at the bottom, followed by yet another basin of peaceful waters. We spent the best part of the morning roping the raft through the waterfall, using up every inch of rope. For a bit of fun, we surfed the chute down with great speed into the bottom basin and the raft high up on the bank. Not wanting to get wet again, we climbed some 1,500 feet up the cliff face, only to be confronted with very thick tea tree scrub. It took us the rest of the afternoon to get back to camp. The distance from the camp to where the raft were anchored as the crow flies wouldn't have been 100 yards. At least Fred had his first taste of real rock climbing. As Sugra was going down the cliff from the campsite, he dropped his camera, smashed it, and nearly lost the film by getting it soaked. The gear was made shipshape, and dried out for the next day's fun amongst the powerful rapids. Monday, the 4th of January. The gear was carried as near as to the rafts as possible. Tim and Doc climbed around the lower waterfall and swam to collect the raft from the lower basin. Everything was lowered down the cliff to the raft below by rope. The gear was lashed down and everything was set to go. Calm waters for half a mile or so, and then back into rough rapids. One of the ropes came adrift and snagged badly, causing the raft to overturn. The raft had to be cut loose to stop even more damage and loss of gear. Tim lost his bush parka, which he had tied on with some rope. The going became better after that obstacle, and soon we were drifting down the most beautiful scenic gorge, with the sun searching our worn and tired bodies. The afternoon came with rain drizzling down and the surroundings became dark as we entered another gorge. Suddenly approached what seemed to be another waterfall. The river flowed faster and realised that we were heading for the bank. Moored the raft, climbed around up the bank to observe the fall. There it was, a huge drop of about 90 feet to a gorge below, an incredible sight. We shivered at the thought of even attempting it. There was just no way out or around the fall. The gorge was just inaccessible, except the way we'd come. We just stood there in astonished silence and wondered what to do. This was the start of Deception Gorge, for those who are going down there. The first section of the waterfall went down about 70 degrees for 30 feet or so, and then it levelled off to about 30 degrees for some 10 yards to the left. Then to the right, into a very fast section of about 6 feet wide, barely enough room for our raft, and then subsequently disappeared from our sight. The thought of being swept sideways into the cliff frightened us no end. Then, not being able to see what was at the bottom of it all, the water was really nerve-wracking. It was getting late, dark and cold, and there was nowhere to set camp. Everyone was tired. All thoughts were to ourselves as our voices were drowned by the noise of the thundering waters. Dot mumbled a few religious lines, so we shook each other's hand. Very dramatic on the shores of the mighty Franklin River at its worst. The ropes were holding the raft together were tightened and everything was ready to go. Fred and Tim were on the front corners and Doc and Sugra on the left, on the rear of the raft, so that it was balanced. We paddled into side stream under the current until the current took over and our only lifesaver. Over we went, nose divings into the white foaming boiling water. Everyone hung on for all they were worth. The raft shot to the surface and veered sharply to the left onto a big rock and stuck fast. The water was pouring over us as we secured some lashing that had loosened. Pushing the raft off into the boiling waters and shot off down the narrow section. One second we were heading straight for the cliff and you could literally feel the current sweep you away into the midstream just before we went down and into the gorge. We became stuck fast at the bottom of the falls and here the water proceeded to wreck the raft. One lashing holding the two rafts together snapped with a strain and the raft split apart at one end. Doc yelled above the roar at Tim and pointed to his rucksack disappearing down the river. Tim jumped in after it and caught up to it, rowed with it through the rapids under the cliff, downstream to finally scramble exhausted onto the bank. The remainder of us floated on the upside down raft past the other side and pulled in about 300 yards downstream. Tim, hurting his knee badly in his jump, found his knee a handicap to scramble along the bank, and so he jumped back into the river with his rucksack and let the current take him down to the rest of us. Quite a lot of gear was lost, including all our cooking utensils, pump, tomahawk, and quite a lot of food. But we were through. We built a big fire and set up camp on a very rocky ground. We dried ourselves out and relaxed into a cozy, warm sleeping bags, dreaming of how great it was to be alive. Tuesday, the 5th of January. That the 4th of January, incidentally, was my mother's birthday. That's by the way. Tuesday, the 5th of January. The rafts were smashed beyond relief. Repairs were made with what rope we had to spare and set off again once more. The going seemed good with the rafts lashed together. When going through the rough waters, the rafts being together protected our gear. The worst wasn't over yet though. Half a mile later it started again. The gorge became deep and narrow with overhanging rocks. Panic stop. The bottom just fell out of the river. The water looked 8 feet straight down and swished around a massive boulder that stuck out of the water. Chilling sight, far too dangerous to ride. Fastening long ropes to both ends of the raft and the water did the rest. While we jumped from boulder to boulder to guide it through without wrecking more of the raft. Then it jammed. Tim and Dot furiously manoeuvred it free and all jumped for it as it started to move. Fred left his jump too late and was stranded on the last big boulder outcrop with boiling water 8 feet below him. The raft was swept uncontrollably down down some more fiery rapids until reaching a little calm patch and tied up to the rocks some 150 yards downstream. There was no way back to Fred. Panic stations. No one spoke or stared back at Fred. There was so much noise that no one could even hear what when shouting to one another. Tim and Doc gestured madly, trying to tell Fred to dive out and down below the rock, but Fred was stunned. He stood dangerously close to the edge of the rock, shaking like a leaf, paralysed with fear. Every minute made it only worse, afraid of drowning or being sucked down or pinned under a frightening boulder or logs. Straightening his glasses, pulling on his crash helmet and securing his life jacket, Fred suddenly jumped and disappeared into the thundering white foam waters. The other three krauts on the raft, staring scared stiff. In only a matter of seconds, the life jacket pushed Fred to the surface. Then the river ripped him over the rocks to the raft, where he was dragged aboard, exhausted. Eventually, everyone tensely excited, and so we took off smartly. Hit some small rapids and into some calm waters. The rafts were cut loose from one another, and as we were doing so, Sugri yelled out as the first aid box sank out of sight, a vital supply gone. The rafts were back to normal, except for three tubes instead of four to each. Tim and Doc's tempers would not have lasted because whenever they hit the slightest turbulence, they would overbalance. The raft was very unstable with the main beams strapped in the centre as a real wreck, and so decided to strengthen the raft temporarily. Fred and Sugra went on ahead and waited for Tim and Doc to repair the raft. The river opened up into a huge basin, fantastic sight looking back upstream. The mountains looked as though they had snow on them with their white quartzite peaks. The sun was warm and bright, and not a cloud to be seen, all looking like an Austrian picture postcard, with the peaks rising vertically for 100 feet or more out of the Franklin River with its heavy forest banks. We called this incredible spot the Basin. It was like going into a quiet trout pool with quiet, small rapids flowing around a large horseshoe-shaped pebble beach. Downstream from this spot entered the Andrew River, with Mount McCall rising from its banks. The afternoon was spent lazing in the sun in the raw and letting the food and clothes dry out in the beautiful summer warmth. Cooked up a great meal and sat around a big fire, arguing about Sugra's religious beliefs and of ghosts and the supernatural under the night's bright full moon, which cast great tree shadows across the basin floor. Went to bed with the trembles and exhaustion of the long day. Wednesday, 6th of January. The rest of the day in this beautiful spot, trout were jumping about the river, with cormorants taking quite an interest. Ducks were plentiful, if only we had had a gun. Two tiger snakes were seen heading for some big boulders. One was teased out and poked to try to get it out. After some time, it did come out, and John or Sugra grabbed it by the tail and swung it around like a whip. After some fun and games, killed it and threw it on the coals for eating. Only Sugra was game enough to eat the 5-foot snake. He spent the rest of the afternoon picking the meat from the skeleton. He reckons it tasted like chicken. He didn't convince the rest of us at all. Doc and Tim rebuilt the raft from scratch from what we had left of the tubes, plastic tape and rope. The morale was all too low, and John didn't cooperate at all to help rebuild the raft. Arguments broke out from the smallest incident, probably because of the amount of sun everyone was exposing himself to. John, not used to being in direct sun, was burned very badly and spent a very painful night on the hard rocky ground. Tuesday, the 7th of January, left the basin and passed the Andrew River, which was only a rocky creek flowing into the Franklin. Came into thick kew and pines on both banks. The water was calm and fast flowing until we came to the top end of a horseshoe, referred to map. A couple of small rapids and then an 8-foot waterfall of about 5 feet width into a chute. Fred and Sugra decided to ride it through, and down they went, nosedived out of sight and came up gasping for air amongst the foam. Fred came up without his glasses. The raft was floating upside down with Fred and Sugra clinging to it like wet rags. Relieved to have surfaced at all. Tim and Doc roped the raft through and jumped as it surfaced amongst the thick foam from the waterfall. Sugra and Fred must have gone some 20 feet into the depths. The rafts, being at least 15 feet long, disappeared from sight for quite a long time before resurfacing through the foam. Fred came up without his glasses. The raft was floating upside down with Fred and Sugra clinging to it like wet rags. Relieved to have surfaced at all, Tim and Doc roped the raft through and jumped as it surfaced amongst the thick foam from the waterfall. Sugra and Fred must have gone some 20 feet into the depths. The raft, being at least 15 feet long, disappeared from sight for quite a long time before resurfacing through the foam. The next bend revealed a long series of very nasty rapids with big boulders everywhere. John and Fred went through fine, but Tim and Doc kept spinning out of control. They had made the raft too light and unbalanced for the continual wide waters while trying to fend it from being smashed up again. Tim received a matching bruise for the other bruised kneecap. Doc rammed his back against it on a sharp rock while swimming through the rapids after the raft. He yelled out in pain. Doc had obviously hurt an old back injury. A fractured vertebrate, which had been crushed in a climbing fall 11 months before. The river widened into peaceful, slow-flowing water, unbelievably peaceful. Cormorants, ducks and fish jumped out of the water all around us. The going was now tough, having to do the work by paddling the raft to our next stop, the Jane River, HEC, that's Hydroelectric Commission Huts. Cooked ourselves a big meal and collapsed into luxury mattresses on the floor. Friday the 8th of January, a day of messing around, lashing two rafts end to end and building a Huon Pine outrigger. The Huon Pine was also used as decking for a centreboard. We cast a mast of about 16 feet long and lashed it across tree halfway up, then doubled over a tent fly for the square rig mainsail so it would blow out like a spinnaker. We went to bed early with dreams of sailing down the rest of the Franklin River to where it meets with the Gordon River. Slow progress all day with no wind, drizzly weather, made going very frustrating. Tempers frayed, getting nowhere with our paddling, drifting aimlessly in the slight current. Saw plenty of Tasmanian devils sniffing around the riverbank, not even noticing us. We made a distance of about 3 miles all day before finding beautiful stand of myrtles, an ideal campsite for the night. These trees were huge, and even though it was pouring with rain, it was perfectly dry under them. We built a big fire to dry ourselves out. We'd found some flour back in the Jane River hut and so decided to use it making Johnny cakes. Competition grew strong in who could make the best, but the joy in gutsing ourselves degenerated into a Johnny cake fight with a touch of flour, of course. We found when peeling the remains of our potatoes that they were rotten through and through. Boiling them didn't improve the taste at all, but at least they filled our stomachs. Sunday the 10th of January. According to Sugra's watch, we left the myrtle stand at 7:30 a.m., the earliest we'd ever got underway. The air was fresh, enabling sailing and paddling amongst the mist on the river. The wind died away to nothing, and soon it was back to paddling, singing songs of some description, greatly improved morale amongst us after not much of a breakfast. The food was desperately getting short. The continuous wetness made the food uneatable and uncookable. The day wore on. Reasonable progress was made, even though most of it was paddled. The afternoon came with disaster. The river went into a bend with a fast-flowing rapid and low overhanging trees. The mast just snapped and caused the raft to capsize. The outrigger was smashed as the raft was torn across the rocks by the fast, powerful water. We unlashed everything and converted back to two single rafts. A mile or so further on, we came to an unexpected fall of about 6 feet high. We roped the rafts over and arrived into an area of spectacular geological formations in the cliffs. Limestone caves with entrances facing the river. We explored but found that they went only a short distance, stalactited, hanging from the entrance of some caves, mostly formed by running water into the Franklin River. We were disappointed not having caving equipment with us. From the aerial photos we had with us, we saw that we were very close to arriving into the Franklin River. The last couple of miles were hazardous, fallen trees and fast-flowing rapids. Doc and Tim were well ahead and out of sight. They had roped the raft through the worst of the rough, snaggy sections of the rapids. Being unconcerned, Fred and Tugra tried bashing their way through and hit big trouble. They ripped open two tubes on one hidden log and swept into another tree, entangling themselves good and proper. Tugra still had his axe and so went to town chopping the raft free to one third of its original size. The rucksacks were then lashed onto one tube raft, with Tugra sitting on the top paddling and shouting to Tim and Doc to come and rescue them. Fred was hanging on behind, kicking with his feet all like all hell. After some time, Tim and Doc, hearing the shouting, arrived back upstream paddling for some distance from the Gordon River. Doc dragged Fred from the river and hastily we paddled the last half mile to the Gordon River and the mouth of the Franklin River. We, Doc, Tim, Tugra, or John, and Fred had conquered the Franklin River and attempted on rafts made buoyant with tractor tire tubes. We shook hands, triumph at last. We made camp in thick, lush vegetation, sat around a big campfire, carrying on about what people would say and eating the remains of our last dehydrated food muck. Monday the 11th of January. Repairs were made to the two tubes on Fred's and Sugra's raft using a patched spare. We also repaired the latter raft with what was left of the remaining ropes and plastic tape. It was bright sunshine as we left the Franklin. Heading down the wide, deep, very slow-flowing Gordon was hard work. At midday, the sun gave way to drizzle and stronger, colder headwinds made going very slow. Kingfisher birds had been following us all the way from the Franklin, and fish were jumping all around us. Late afternoon, we reached the St. John's Falls hydro huts. We were completely out of food, but luckily we found two cans of beetroot in one of the huts. They were heated on the gas stove and to make them a little bit more wholesome. We lit the gas lights and spent the night reading literature till our eyes slowly wore us to sleep. Tuesday the 12th of January, made ready the little gear we had left and studied the wallabies and snakes crawling around everywhere. Killed one for something to do. Around midday, to our surprise, the Denison Star from Strawn, loaded with tourists, came into view. Lucky for us, an HEC Hydroelectric Commission chief was on board waiting to see the layout of the huts from the river. Usually the Denison Star goes about at Butler Island, some 3 or 4 miles downstream. We waved furiously to attract attention. The horn blew and heard the skipper, owner, Mr. Vic Morrison, telling the tourists of our venture over the loudspeaker. Paddled all the gear to the Denison Star and left Fred with it while Doc, Tim and Tugra paddled the raft back ashore and swam back down to the Denison Star exhausted. Cleaned ourselves and then given first-class treatment of a beautiful civilised meal in the luxury of leather cushioned chairs in the lounge. Back in Strawn, we were told that an ABC TV cameraman had been waiting for us. He had left last Saturday, so we collected Fred's battered ute from the police station and drove for home. As we were going up Mount Arrowsmith, a big American sedan came very close to a head-on collision with us and so forced Fred to swerve, in so doing smashed into the bank and caused another broken headlight. Arrived at Derwent Bridge to pick up Sugra's car, we ran into some rovers and rangers from South Australia who had just walked through the reserve. They were camped under the bridge, and so we decided to join them. Having no headlights anyway, trip home had to wait till the next morning. Wednesday the 13th of January. Slow trip home with the extra people and gear. Arrived in Hobart about 3 in the afternoon. Tim and Doc went directly to Chris's at the Mercury to have a press release of our trip. That night there was a party for all at 26 Mona Street, Battery Point, to welcome back the heroes of the Franklin River.